you'll have to tell me if it's better because we have new speakers that were just installed this week, so hopefully we won't crackle anymore. You may notice that the order of service you have has last week's date on it. It's because we're going to, for the first service today, the quieter of our two services. It will be Bedlam at the next one where we have the mummers play with all the kids. But for this one, the quieter of the two services, we're going to do the service that we would have had last week. So you didn't get the wrong program when you look at the date. We just saved paper and didn't print them again. We certainly have had a bit of reprieve from the cold weather, as I told someone before church. Some of you know I regularly go to Mexico, and I'll be going down again, and I checked the weather in San Miguel, and it was 5 degrees colder this morning in San Miguel than it is here this morning, so I'm a little concerned about that. But the snow has certainly come, and our days are getting shorter, and it's clearly the season where we move inward, into our homes, into ourselves. We come together in the warmth of worship, the warmth of community, seeking and waiting for the light. And now, as Mike lights our chalice, I invite you to join in the words of our covenant. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. In ancient times, candles were mounted on wagon wheels, where it were decorated with evergreens, and they were lit during the dark weeks leading up to the winter solstice, when the return of the light was celebrated. Christians adopted a similar tradition of lighting candles during the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas, celebrating the light Jesus brings to the world. Each candle stands for one of the messages of the Advent season. Today, the fourth Sunday of Advent, we'll light all four. So we light our first candle again for hope. Hope that uplifts our spirits. Hope that gives courage to those experiencing difficult times. Hope that we claim for ourselves and hope that we bring to others in this season. The second, we light again for peace. For peace in our hearts and in our homes. For peace in our country and in our world. For the peace of which the angels sing. We light our third candle for love. Love for those we know so well and for those we have never seen. The love that Jesus taught, the love that all religions teach. Love for the stranger, for the poor, for the downtrodden. Love that heals all wounds and puts to flight all fears. And finally, we light our pink candle for joy. The joy that comes into our hearts in this season. The joy of being with friends and family. The joy of sharing and giving to others. The joy of music and holiday gatherings. And the joy that we're called to bring to others who need their spirits uplifted in this season. Today we're going to reflect on the Christmas story with new eyes, with eyes of justice and concern. So let's now tell the story together in song. It's hymn 228. It starts like any story, Once in Royal David City.
It's Christmas time, there's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light and we banish shame. And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time, but say a prayer, pray for the other one. Oh, at Christmas time, it's hard, but when you're having fun, there There's a world outside your window, and it's a world of dread and fear. Where the only water flowing is the bitter sting of tears. And the Christmas bells that ring are the clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight, thank God, it's them instead of you. And there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time. The greatest gift there is this year is life. Oh, if nothing ever grows, if no rain or rivers flow, do they know it's Christmas time at all? Here's to you, raise a glass for everyone. Here's to them underneath that burning sun. Do they know it's Christmas time at all?
Let them know it's Christmas time again. There are many among us here in our country and throughout the world who don't know it's Christmas time because they don't receive that message that Christmas time brings. I invite you now to join me in the reading this morning. It's found in your hymnal at number 615. By one of my favorite theologians, Howard Thurman. We'll read it together. When the song of angels is still, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the brothers, to make music in the heart. In your program, you'll find a red insert which has a carol on each side, and there's something a little different about carols. You know, over the centuries, different verses are added and written to the carols, and today I've selected two carols with verses that have real social justice emphasis added to them. So as we focus on that part of the Christmas story, we get to sing a bit about it today. So I invite you to rise as you're able and join in singing this version of O Little Town of Bethlehem. Every year, we retell the Christmas story. It's actually a story that's pieced together from the Gospels of Christian Scripture. Over the centuries, we've made it a very sweet story. A lovely couple gives birth to a perfect child. Darling animals surround the couple and the child in a pastoral setting. Guests from far and near come to see the baby and bring lovely gifts, story of love and hope and joy and peace and dreams come true. All this is, of course, in the story, and we want to and we should hold the ideals that are there in our hearts at this time of year. But there's a lot more to the Christmas story than just the idealized, quaint, stable, lovely shepherds and charming visitors. More than just the sweet side of the story. There's a part of the story, I think, that we often rather quickly read over. In that part of the story, it's a story about poor people without power. It's a story of excluded people, a story of a society not willing to make room for the stranger. In the story, we see the entitled, the wealthy, and the lowly come together. Or do they? In the figurines we have in our manger scenes, they're all together. But in the biblical text, the shepherds and the kings or wise men never meet. They're not even in the same book of the Bible. The shepherds are in Luke, the wise men are in Matthew. Through the centuries, we've focused on the part of the story that's comfortable for us. It makes us feel good. And I don't think we really want a Christmas story that challenges us, even makes us feel perhaps a little uncomfortable or a little guilty. And I don't want us to give up the nice Christmas story of joy and love and dreams come true, but I don't want us to miss the other messages in the story either. The messages about injustice and inequality, about the call to make room for those who come to our community from other places, the call to really see the plight of the poor and the excluded, the challenge to live lives of real peace and goodwill towards all. Those are all in the story too. So this morning, I'd like to open our eyes and look at those more neglected pieces of the story a bit. Think where the story really starts. With a pregnant, unwed teenage girl who marries an older man for protection from a society that would otherwise treat her and judge her very harshly. These people live in a nation that is occupied by foreigners who oppress them, who tax them, but don't really meet their needs. We meet them in the Christmas story having to leave their home in Nazareth, which is in the region of Galilee, and go to Bethlehem, which is in the region of Judea. And to get there, you know, unless you go way around, you have to go through Samaria. The Samaritans are hostile towards the Jews. This young couple travels at the risk of being attacked. The journey's about 80 miles. Doesn't seem much today to make a trip in our fast-moving world of highways and automobiles. But that was a long and dangerous journey for a 9-month pregnant woman traveling on a donkey through territory which at the very least had people that wasn't going to help them. And why were they going to Bethlehem? Well, in the story, they're going essentially to be kept track of, to be counted, to be in a place where their oppressor wants them to be, to pay into that oppressor's coffers. Essentially, they're forced to comply with rules that make no sense and that put them at risk. They live under Roman rule at the whim of Roman governor, and they are powerless people. Yes, they lived in ancient times. But their story, I think, is the story of many in our time. So I ask you, as you watch the news, as you walk in the streets, who are the Marys and Josephs today? Are they the pregnant teenage girl and her boyfriend in the inner city? Are they the immigrant couple coming to the U.S., traveling dangerously so their baby can be born here? Are they the ones making the difficult journey across the U.S.-Mexican border? Are they the homeless that go unnoticed, who live in the streets of the wealthiest nation in the world? Are they the Syrians who are having to flee their country? Are they the poor of Haiti or India or Africa or anywhere? Are they all those who live at the whim and under the fear of a repressive government? I think they're all the Mary and Josephs of our day. So let's go back to the biblical story a little bit, because there's a pivotal moment in that story that sets the stage for what's to come. You remember, I love it, on our early service on Christmas Eve when the innkeeper holds up the sign that says, "No room." That's the pivotal moment. The couple arrives in Bethlehem trying to find shelter, a place to stay, and what do they hear? They hear that no one will make room for them. They knock at the doors of inns in Bethlehem and they're turned away, and finally they end up in a barn, the only shelter that they can find. And surely they go unnoticed by the average person in Bethlehem that day. The question this part of the story poses to us today, I think, is do we take the Marys and Josephs who are knocking at our door, do we take notice of them? And even if we do notice them, which I think, particularly in our affluent suburbs, we really don't do most of the time, are we willing to make room for the Marys and Josephs of our time? I have to say that much of the time it seems to me that the answer to that question in our society is no, we're not. As I reflect on all the stories of unwillingness to make room for others that I've encountered in my life, I'm reminded of one of the greatest sermons of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Some of you may know it. It's titled The Knock at Midnight. Sermon is based on a chapter in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 11. It's the same gospel where we read about there being no room for Mary and Joseph, so it comes right out of the same text. But in that story, a man knocks at his neighbor's door at midnight, and he's asked for 3 loaves of bread because guests have arrived at the neighbor's home and he has nothing to feed them. The neighbor doesn't answer the door, but shouts out, "Don't bother me. The door's now shut. My children are in bed and I can't get up and give you anything. Go away." You see, it's midnight. Not a convenient time to make room. Essentially, the neighbor says to the man who knocks, I don't want to know your situation, at least not now, maybe tomorrow. There's no room in my heart for you. It's not the right time. But as King reminds us again and again in that sermon, it's midnight. A dark time, literally, but also figuratively for many. The message of these 2 stories in the Gospel of Luke is that there are people knocking at our doors, seeking our help. And their needs are indeed urgent. And how do we respond to all these Marys and Josephs? So much of the time, we don't bother. Most of the time, even when we hear the knock, we do nothing. Today, right now, many are knocking at our doors at inconvenient times, but because it's midnight for them. And yes, they knock when we're resting or busy or when our plate is full, and we're not interested in knowing their troubles at that time. You know, it was midnight, or thereabouts, when those 2 young travelers, ready to have a child, knocked at the door of the inn and were told that there was no room. Today, right now, people are going from door to door, be it the doors of our churches or of our Congress or of your heart, and they're asking for us to make room for them. And they're saying it's midnight. This is a dark time for them and for those like them. And right now, who's it midnight for? It's midnight for those immigrants who are here without the right papers and from whom we as a nation are willing to take labor, but not make legal room for them. Right now, it's midnight for the victims of gun violence who we won't hear knocking at the door as they say and say again, "Do something to protect my children." Right now, it's midnight for those right here in our community who can't make ends meet. who don't even have enough food to make it through the month. And what do as a nation? We cut $38 off their food stamps to make it all the tougher. Right now it's midnight for those long-term unemployed because our Congress in this compromise budget will not fund their meager benefits that they need to live on. Right now it's midnight for those who still can't get their health care needs properly met, and it seems that all the energy in our nation is directed at assuring that health care reforms that these people desperately need will fail. It's midnight for those homeless folks in our city who in the cold weather that we've had and that will come again, have all they can do just to keep from freezing. It's midnight for lots of folks in our society, and they're knocking at our door. You know, in the Christmas story, at least the innkeeper answers the door. At least he says they can go to the barn. And we are all innkeepers. And there are lots of folks knocking. And how are we going to answer the question, will we make room for them? But we're also not just the innkeepers in the story. Some of us who are struggling a bit, are more like the shepherds who have little, who live kind of on the edge and eke out a living as best they can. But in truth, I don't see a lot of shepherds here. Most of us are more like the kings in the Christmas story. We see a profound class difference in that story. Look at the manger scene. People basically dressed in rags, and then three bejeweled, excessively wealthy people. Nobody in the middle. Today we live in a time of growing inequality, where we pass laws that favor those with money so they can get richer and the poor poorer. I just heard the other day the net worth of the individuals in the top 1% is 288 times higher than the average person. Today, CEOs make obscene salaries, and the gap between the rich and the poor has never been greater. Today, you can't possibly live on the minimum wage, and there's fierce opposition to raising it. It's just getting to be midnight, and people are knocking at the door on the issue of growing income disparity in our nation, on all these issues. The have-nots are knocking. And it seems that most of the time, we're turning a deaf ear. You know, in the story, the kings bring expensive gifts, and they give them to the poor family. And we could say, oh, they show humility. But you know, it's more, if you look what they're doing about paying homage to a Messiah who's destined to become a king like them, the king of the Jews, than one that's really motivated by desire to give to the poor. In general. You know, if they really saw what was happening in that stable, if they got that part of the story, they would have brought soup and bread and blankets, not gold and frankincense and myrrh. We can think of the wise men as exemplars of charity, and we sometimes make that reference in our Christmas stories, but you know, they are really much more reminders of the profound economic disparity in the Middle East 2,000 years ago. And isn't that where we are today as well? Probably worse. I think that the Jesus born on Christmas in a stable is remembered 2,000 years later because he brought a powerful message of radical inclusion to the world. A message that said the test of anyone's faith is not their statement of belief or their offerings in the temple, but how they treat the poor, the downtrodden, the sick, the oppressed. It's midnight for so many of them, and they're knocking at the door. And how we as individuals in a society and as a society respond is really the test of whether or not we get the message of Christmas. Christmas ought to remind us that people are always knocking at the door, and we are called to respond with love and kindness, and the sharing of our resources. So again this year, Christmas will come and go, And we'll have our parties and exchange gifts, all wonderful. And we'll even share the love of the season, maybe even feel a bit of the spirit of peace and goodwill. And that's all wonderful. But what about the other part of the story? Will we hear the knocks? Will we answer the door? Will we make room in our hearts and in our society, not just at Christmas, but at every day? As Howard Thurman so eloquently stated it in the reading which you read with me, when the song of the angel is still, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the brothers, and to make music in the heart. You know, in Dickens' Christmas Carol, it ends by him telling us that Mr. Scrooge, after all his experiences, is now become a man who is known to keep Christmas well. But Christmas is not something you keep. It is something you give away. So I invite you to go forth with the true spirit of Christmas, doing the work of Christmas, giving it away wherever you can. Amen.